Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. Whoever is fixing the Obamacare website might also take a peek at the statin calculator. After the big announcement last week of new guidelines for who should take cholesterol-lowering drugs, the heart health establishment has, you might say, egg whites on its face for blowing the math. Joining me now is Dr. Kim Allen Williams, Vice President of the American College of Cardiology. He's also a professor and chief of the Division of Cardiology at Rush University School of Medicine. He joins us from Dallas, where the annual meeting of the American Health Association has just wrapped up. Dr. Williams, hello from New York. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning.
Can you remind us first about this risk calculator? What is it? And was it new compared to people how people figured out in the past whether to prescribe statins?
Yes. When you think about trying to assess before anyone has a heart attack or stroke, what their risk is, there are risk factors that we know. And the question that always comes up is how, for the average person, do you rank those risk factors? And to the extent that they are numerical, that is, one number is higher than another for a cholesterol level, let's say, how do you actually add them up and come up with the aggregate risk? And so we've had some tools in the past. The most famous would be the Framingham Risk Score. But the Framingham Risk Score was really about cardiovascular disease, didn't really consider stroke, didn't consider special populations that weren't involved in the collection of data in Framingham. So it was very difficult, for example, for African Americans to be included in that. And furthermore, the data that it was based upon really didn't have all of the events that we'd like to see. And so it was time to come up with new ways of doing it. And fact of the matter is, unlike your intro lines, for example, this is really not a situation where the calculator was supposed to be the last calculator that we use and supposed to fix everything. It's supposed to be a living document that every time there's another large cohort of outcomes that take into further risk factors, such as family history would be a really good one to take into account, or other novel markers if they become widely used. One could actually put that data in, mix it with the rest of the pooled cohort, and have a new document.
Let me jump in, because the lead article in the New York Times, to bring this to a level where a lot of my listeners might have seen it, one day last week, was about how this new risk calculator came out, risk of heart attacks and strokes, calculated now so that it's possible that many more people than before might be prescribed these cholesterol-lowering drugs called statins as preventive measures. Now, as of yesterday, the lead story in the New York Times was that somebody blew the risk calculator and way overestimated the number of people who should be recommended statins, because it overestimates risk by between 75 and 150%. So do you agree with that interpretation? Did somebody blow the math by that degree?
I think if you look at the data objectively, it's the New York Times article that did not get the math right. So let's go back and deal with the first question. Yes, the idea was to expand the population in whom a discussion would occur with their physician about whether or not it was appropriate for them to be on a statin. There's no automatic, you go onto the American Heart Association website, put your numbers in, come up with them, and then tell your doctor, you know, I'm above 7.5%, please send me a prescription. Nothing like that. It's really just supposed to be one clinical practice tool that people can use, and these guidelines are always, for the physicians who read the guidelines and try to follow them, they'll see that the document is steeped with that sort of caveat. So it really wasn't going to expand in any automatic fashion. Now, the question that you're really asking is, are there people who are at risk who are not being treated? And the answer is yes. In my practice, I actually found that there were people who, by those guidelines, we would have done preventive care with a statin in the past, particularly an LDL cholesterol, the scary cholesterol, the one that blocks the arteries the most, of greater than 160, we would have automatically treated without considering the risk. Now, those patients wouldn't be treated unless they had a high aggregate risk, not just one number. So,
but I think the question that I was asking was kind of the opposite of that. According to the two Harvard Medical School professors,
that was the second question.
Quoted in the article, the calculator overestimates the risk by between 75 and 150%.
Right.
So is it possible that if doctors use this calculator, they would tend to prescribe drugs for a lot of people who don't actually need them?
I understand the question. So I think you understand the first part is that this was designed to be a clinical tool and that it would actually help the assessment of risk, really not prescribe statins. Now, to the New York Times part, and we actually have some wonderful physicians who I think, you know, the New York Times put it as a controversy, but I would actually put it the opposite way. It's additional data. Now, in the cold light of day, they say that they actually brought that data to the attention of the authors. I've spoken personally to all of the authors and have been assured that all of the questions were actually resolved, that the data that these doctors were using were collected on much lower risk people. And, you know, there's a couple major issues with that. And I'd like to see the data myself to confirm any of this.
So you stand by the calculator as it was released last week?
I stand by the calculator. So does the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association. And what would happen is that if those folks were validated, and it wasn't a low-risk, young, particularly female population. Women are at high risk for strokes, but when they're younger, they have so much less heart attacks until after menopause when they catch up with men, for example. So if you have a risk calculator that starts early in life in a female population, that's going to lower the risk. There was some question about whether or not the people in those databases that were presented in the New York Times actually were partially treated with statins. And then the other major issue was whether or not their blood pressures were actually self-reported or measured because they were done by mm-hmm. surveys.
Well, explain something else to me about this, because, again, the question that we're most interested in this conversation, or that I am, is whether there's a risk of overtreating, prescribing medication more than is actually needed for people. And one thing I don't understand is why the recommendation would be to treat people who don't have the very high cholesterol levels with statins, which are specifically cholesterol-lowering drugs. So in other words, if your risk of heart attack or stroke comes from other risk factors, high blood pressure, smoking, things that are not high cholesterol, why would a cholesterol-lowering drug be indicated?
So first of all, it's a great question. I want to start with the last part of it. If you look throughout the document, it says exactly what you said. You did that very well. That what we're supposed to be doing is lowering our aggregate risk by stopping smoking, having an exercise program, doing a diet that will not lead to plaque formation in arteries. Having said that, the first part of your question gets to the fact that most of the people in this country who have a heart attack actually have a so-called normal cholesterol. And so so what year was it? It was actually 1918 was the last time that heart disease was not the leading killer of people in the United States. And so, you know, it's really been my career goal to end up number two, at least.
Great goal. But from what you just said, it would seem to suggest that cholesterol is not the causative risk factor for heart attacks and strokes that we may have thought in the past, if you can have the lower cholesterol but still have the elevated risk. Is that what you're finding?
You did that very well. Okay, so that what we're really describing is that it's multiple risks together. Therefore, you have a risk calculator. It's not one number. You know, the only cholesterol, there's multiple factors that go into that calculator, and only two of them are cholesterol because, yes, as the cholesterol goes up, the risk goes up, and as the cholesterol goes down, it actually goes down. And so if you're asking specifically in populations who have been treated is an LDL that we would think, you know, really shouldn't be treated because it's less than 100 or less than 70 or whatever target we used to use in the past. If you compare populations who have 70 versus 40, 40 actually is better. And so that has very clearly been defined. And so having a so-called normal cholesterol tends to give you a, quote, normal outcome, in which in this country is that at least two-thirds of people will have a coronary event.
So if you have other risk factors that are high, then you need even lower than average cholesterol in order to be safe.
Absolutely. But also average cholesterol is pretty bad if you think of the average outcome of the United States.
Lower than what's considered normal cholesterol in order to be safe.
That's right. And I think that we really have based this on data. That's what's really important here. That is, there are large cohorts that have been measured in terms of their treatment and their outcomes that led to the calculator doing what it does. Now, do I have any doubt that there's some validity to what the Harvard professors say? I'm sure there is. And maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle. And, you know, when you take nine studies and pool the best results from those nine studies, which actually ended up being less than the nine, you really would like to have more data and more data and more data. And, you know, that's really what the aim of the college and the Heart Association are right now, to try to continue to have a living document that as more data becomes available, if it's appropriate, it can be incorporated.
One last data question then.
Sure.
I've heard that the data indicates, the actual studies on human beings indicate that statins have been effective in preventing second heart attacks or strokes in people who've had them in the past, but that there isn't data to indicate that they prevent first heart attacks and strokes, and yet the guidelines for prescription are moving toward that too, preventing toward giving them to people who've never had a heart event. Is any of that accurate?
Not really. There is, you know, we actually have a small but very convincing amount of data, actually by one of the Harvard professors that that was quoted in the Jupiter trial, where they actually did do primary prevention in people who are at high risk because of other risk factors such as C-reactive protein. And there definitely was a decrease in first events if a person was treated with a statin and they had risk. And it does, this is really an important point that you're making. Everyone should be on a statin pretty much unless they're intolerant for secondary prevention. No question about that. And the data is rock solid there. And do we need? Would we be more comfortable with more data on primary prevention? Yes, we should have it because we've been focusing on the people who've had heart attacks.
When you say secondary prevention, in other words, anybody who's had a heart attack or a stroke should be on a statin.
Exactly.
Period.
And so I think the whole field of cardiology and medicine, to some degree, has been event-driven, and we should be more prevent-driven. And so I hope that this this trend continues to try to eliminate the events. I mean, you know, having a heart attack or a stroke is an incredible economic burden. The number that people are focusing on is that by 2030, at the same rate that we're doing it right now, it would be $800 trillion to care for people with cardiovascular disease in this country. That's an economic burden that will be passed on to our children, and we need to do something.
And having a heart attack or stroke makes you feel bad, too, or dead. So science marches on. So does the debate over the science. We thank Dr. Kim Allen Williams, Vice President of the American College of Cardiology, Professor in Chief of the Division of Cardiology at the Rush University School of Medicine. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Brian.